listening to RN Breakfast with me, Geraldine Doogue, on this Friday, the 4th of March. You can hear us on air, online, on digital radio and on the ABC Radio app. And coming up in this half hour, it's 2 weeks since Cyclone Winston ripped through Fiji. And the long recovery continues because major industries have been brought to a halt. Thousands of homes have been destroyed. We'll speak to the Fijian Minister for Natural Disaster Management, Inya Sero Riatu. But first, to science. Now, if you know anyone who's spent any amount of time in a wheelchair, you'll know how difficult it can be for them. Of course, they can help people to get around, but they're clunky and they're often difficult to manoeuvre. But what if you could power a wheelchair with your brain? Scientists in the US have done just that. And with more, we're joined by our science correspondent, Chris Smith. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Geraldine. Good morning.
This is such an extraordinary story, monkeys powering wheelchairs with their brains. Now, how does it work?
Well, the target here are individuals who are paralysed and would have very little ability to move for themselves. This is a real breakthrough in brain-machine interfaces. What Miguel Nicolelis and his colleagues at Duke University are publishing in the journal Nature Scientific Reports this week is a way of coupling up very tiny, hair-thin electrodes, hundreds of them, that they've implanted into the brains of monkeys. They can record wirelessly the activity of whole clusters or populations of nerve cells in the parts of the brain where the brain makes decisions about what it wants to achieve and how it's going to go about achieving it. It beams the conversation that it's picking up about what these nerve cells are saying to each other via a wireless transmitter to a computer. And what they've done is to write a clever computer algorithm that looks for patterns in these different neuronal signals, and it can tie different patterns of neuronal activity and different latencies of nerve activity to the intention of the animal, and then turn that into a motor program that can drive a wheelchair around. So what the researchers did first was to put some monkeys, they weren't paralyzed, but they were just in a wheelchair, and they moved them manually around a room in different directions, going towards a reward in the middle of the room, a grape, which the monkeys wanted. And this meant that the monkeys always wanted to go towards the grape, so the computer was registering what the monkey's brain was thinking
so
about,
it tapped,
how do I get there?
It tapped their planning, in other words.
Correct. And then what they did, having taught the computer this is what this monkey's brain does when it wants to go from A to B, then all they had to do was to listen into what the monkey's brains were doing when they didn't have anyone pushing them around, and just turn the computer output into a motor program for the motors on the wheelchair, and the monkeys were able to drive themselves around. And this is a really big step forward, because people who have very severe head injuries, strokes, severe high spinal injuries, and are maybe even tetraplegic, in some cases, people can't even blink for themselves, but they can certainly think. And if we could use this same sort of network of electrodes and arrays of electrodes in the brain, record information in this way, we could potentially restore a lot of independence, much more than people like in that situation have at the moment, two patients in that terrible situation.
Well, quite. I happen to know someone that's in this situation. So how is this very much to be developed? Or, I mean, can we see this happening in the next few years? Applying
well,
it to people?
The implants are slightly in their infancy, in the sense that at the moment you've got quite a big load of gadgetry that does all of this. But actually, the strides forward are spectacular. And I remember being at the American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting in 2006 in St. Louis, along with Robin Williams, actually, from the science show. Mm. And we sat there watching another rival group to this present data on how they were getting monkeys to make robot arms move just with one arm, recording from their brain activity. And so in the last 10 years, we've seen it go from just a very rough, gross movement of an arm to this ability to record from both sides of the brain and get a total body intention of movement, which is what they're demonstrating with this.
Marvellous. And still on the topic of robots, scientists have developed robots, I understand, that can sense touch. Is this a sort of development of that earlier story?
Well, it's a different kettle of fish. And in fact, what they're going for is the robotic skin. This is Rob Shepherd, who's a researcher at Cornell University, with a very spectacular paper in Science this week. In fact, it he is at pains to emphasise that this was his students who dreamt this up. He just had a bunch of students taking a course in his lab, and it's not every day that a bunch of students come and do a course that you teach at a university and you give them a project to do and it turns into a paper, a groundbreaking paper in one of the world's best science journals. But that's what he gave these students to do. I want you to go and solve the problem of how we make a soft skin for a soft robot so that it can feel its environment and it can detect when it's being touched and deformed and by how much, and maybe even light up, because we want to be able to convey other kinds of signatures and signals with these sorts of things. The students solved it. And the way they've done this is that they've used rubber, which is conductive. It's almost like a sandwich. So you have an outer layer on, that's the bread of the sandwich. And inside that is a pneumatic layer, which can be pumped up and deflated to move the skin around. And it's in little patches. And then above that, you've got a conductive layer of rubber, then an insulator, then another conductive layer of rubber. And you can put electricity through the two conductive layers. And because they're separated by an insulator, that makes a capacitor, as the electrical people in the audience will understand. Mm. And when you deform a capacitor surface like that, it changes its capacitance. And this means you get a signal you can register as to how much this skin is being deformed. And you can stretch it by 5 times its size in any direction. So it's very stretchy, very manipulable. And the other thing the students did was to put some tiny particles of different chemicals into the insulator layer. And when the electricity is applied, they light up. So now you've got a skin which can be deformed, it can move, it can sense things and sense them in a quantitative way, and you can send signals in that will make it change colour subtly. So you've sort of made what an octopus or a cuttlefish does, but you could put that on a robot and your robot could even blush if you embarrassed it.
Okay, lots of lovely applications. And look, finally today, Chris, something called, is it a Lisa Pathfinder, detecting gravitational waves?
Yes, well, the world was totally blown away by the whole idea of gravitational waves being detected for the first time by the LIGO team in America last month. And that was very reassuring for the scientists who are behind the LISA or eLISA Pathfinder project, because the LIGO detector in America, or the two detectors that we used, that actually is a relatively small apparatus that can only detect a small regime of gravitational waves. What scientists want to do is to build a very big detector costing €1 billion out in space, which will use 1 million kilometres of space as its own detecting array. And in order to make it work, they need to do some experiments first. And actually, they deployed at the beginning of December a probe called eLISA Pathfinder, the LISA Pathfinder probe. This has gone out to a patch of sky. It's about a million and a half kilometres from the Earth. It's at a point called the Lagrange point, which is where the gravity between Earth and the Sun is balanced. And inside this probe, very expensive this, there are two cubes of an alloy of gold and platinum. They weigh 2 kilos each, just hovering in space, 38 centimetres apart, and a laser beam is measuring the distance between them to within 1/1 millimetre. And they're going to use this to future-proof how they then build this giant array that's going to be in space, this eLISA project, which is going to be this big detector for gravitational waves in the future. It turned on the 23rd of February, and the European Space Agency say it's working, which is a big relief given they've spent €440 million putting it there.
Chris, thank you very much indeed for bringing us up to date today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me. See you soon.
Our science correspondent, Chris Smith, who always causes one's jaw to drop. And you can hear more from Chris on The Naked Scientist tonight at 10 p.m. It's a terrific program. I've caught it a couple of times. It's really good, beautifully produced. And in tonight's episode, a dip into the world of gravitational waves with the Astronomer Royal, Lord Martin Rees. It's 16 minutes to 7.